said Raphael. You will never get sick, never die, and be strong and young forever. You will never age. What have you got to complain about?
Young forever, Simon thought. It sounded good, but did anyone really want to be 16 forever? It would have been one thing to be frozen forever at 25, but 16? To always be this gangly? To never really grow into himself, his face, or his body? Not to mention that, looking like this, he'd never be able to go into a bar and order a drink, ever, for eternity.
And, Raphael added, you do not even have to give up the sun.
Simon had no desire to go down that road again. I heard the others talking about you in Dumore, he said. I know you put on a cross every Sunday and go to see your family. I bet they don't even know you're a vampire. So don't tell me to leave everyone in my life behind. I won't do it, and I won't lie and say I will.
Raphael's eyes glittered. What my family believes doesn't matter. It's what I believe, what I know. A true vampire knows he is dead. He accepts his death. But you think you are still one of the living. It is that which makes you so dangerous. You cannot acknowledge that you are no longer alive.
It was twilight when Clary shut the door of Amatus's house behind her and threw the bolts home. She leaned against the door for a long moment in the shadowy entryway, her eyes half shut. Exhaustion weighed down every one of her limbs, and her legs ached painfully. Clary? Amatus's insistent voice cut through the silence. Is that you? Clary stayed where she was, adrift in the calming darkness behind her closed eyes. She wanted so badly to be home, she could almost taste the metallic air of the Brooklyn streets. She could see her mother sitting in her chair by the window, dusty, pale yellow light streaming in through the open apartment windows, illuminating her canvas as she painted. Homesickness twisted in her gut like pain. Clary! The voice came from much closer this time. Clary's eyes snapped open. Amatus was standing in front of her, her gray hair pulled severely back, her hands on her hips. Your brother's here to see you. He's waiting in the kitchen.
Jace is here?
Clary fought to keep her rage and astonishment off her face. There was no point showing how angry she was in front of Luke's sister. Amatus was looking at her curiously.
Should I not have let him in? I thought you'd want to see him.
No, it's fine, Clary said, maintaining her even tone with some difficulty. I'm just tired.
Huh.
Amatus looked as if she didn't believe it.
Well, I'll be upstairs if you want me. I need a nap.
Clary couldn't imagine what she'd want Amatus for, but she nodded and limped down the corridor into the kitchen, which was awash with bright light. There was a bowl of fruit on the table, oranges, apples, and pears, and a loaf of thick bread along with butter and cheese, and a plate beside it of what looked like cookies? Had Amatus actually made cookies? At the table sat Jace. He was leaning forward on his elbows, his golden hair tousled, his shirt slightly open at the neck. She could see the thick banding of black marks tracing his collarbone. He held a cookie in his bandaged hand. So Sebastian was right. He had hurt himself. Not that she cared.
Good, he said. You're back. I was beginning to think you'd fallen into a canal.
Clary just stared at him, wordless. She wondered if he could read the anger in her eyes. He leaned back in the chair, throwing one arm casually over the back of it. If it hadn't been for the rapid pulse at the base of his throat, she might almost have believed his air of unconcern.
You look exhausted, he added. Where have you been all day?
I was out with Sebastian.
Sebastian?
His look of utter astonishment was momentarily gratifying. He walked me home last night, Clary said, and in her mind the words, I'll just be your brother from now on, just your brother, beat like the rhythm of a damaged heart. And so far, he's the only person in this city who's been remotely nice to me, so yes, I was out with Sebastian.
I see.
Jace set his cookie back down on the plate, his face blank. Clary, I came here to apologize. I shouldn't have spoken to you the way I did.
No, Clary said, you shouldn't have.
I also came to ask you if you'd reconsider going back to New York.
God, Clary said, this again?
It's not safe for you here.
What are you worried about? She asked tonelessly. That they'll throw me in prison like they did with Simon?
Jace's expression didn't change, but he rocked back in his chair, the front legs lifting off the floor, almost as if she had shoved him.
Simon?
Sebastian told me what happened to him, she went on in the same flat voice.
What you did, how you brought him here and then let him just get thrown in jail. Are you trying to get me to hate you?
And you trust Sebastian?
Jace asked. You barely know him, Clary.
She stared at him. Is it not true?
He met her gaze, but his face had gone still, like Sebastian's face when she pushed him away.
It's true.
She seized a plate off the table and flung it at him. He ducked, sending the chair spinning, and the plate hit the wall above the sink and shattered in a starburst of broken porcelain. He leaped out of the chair as she picked up another plate and threw it, her aim going wild. This one bounced off the refrigerator and hit the floor at Jace's feet, where it cracked into two even pieces.
How could you? Simon trusted you. Where is he now? What are they going to do to him?
Nothing, Jace said. He's all right. I saw him last night.
Before or after I saw you? Before or after you pretended everything was all right and you were just fine?
You came away from that thinking I was just fine?
Jace choked on something, almost like a laugh.
I must be a better actor than I thought.
There was a twisted smile on his face. It was a match to the tinder of Clary's rage. How dare he laugh at her now? She scrabbled for the fruit bowl, but it suddenly didn't seem like enough. She kicked the chair out of the way and flung herself at him, knowing it would be the last thing he'd expect her to do. The force of her sudden assault caught him off guard. She slammed into him and he staggered backward, fetching up hard against the edge of the counter. She half fell against him, heard him gasp, and drew back her arm blindly, not even knowing what she intended to do. She had forgotten how fast he was. Her fist slammed, not into his face, but into his upraised hand. He wrapped his fingers around hers, forcing her arm back down to her side. She was suddenly aware of how close they were standing. She was leaning against him, pressing him back against the counter with the slight weight of her body. Let go of my hand.
Are you really going to hit me if I do?
His voice was rough and soft, his eyes blazing.
Don't you think you deserve it?
She felt the rise and fall of his chest against her as he laughed without amusement.
Do you think I planned all this? Do you really think I'd do that?
Well, you don't like Simon, do you? Maybe you never have.
Jace made a harsh, incredulous sound and let go of her hand. When Clary stepped back, he held out his right arm, palm up. It took her a moment to realize what he was showing her, the ragged scar along his wrist.
This, he said, his voice as taut as a wire, is where I cut my wrist to let your vampire friend drink my blood. It nearly killed me. And now you think what, that I just abandoned him without a thought?
She stared at the scar on Jace's wrist, one of so many all over his body, scars of all shapes and sizes. Sebastian told me that you brought Simon here, and then Alec marched him up to the guard, let the Clave have him. You must have known.
I brought him here by accident. I asked him to come to the Institute so I could talk to him. About you, actually. I thought maybe he could convince you to drop the idea of coming to Idris. If it's any consolation, he wouldn't even consider it. While he was there, we were attacked by Forsaken. I had to drag him through the portal with me. It was that or leave him there to die.
But why bring him to the Clave? You must have known.
The reason we sent him there was because the only portal in Idris is in the guard. They told us they were sending him back to New York.
And you believed them? After what happened with the Inquisitor?
Clary, the Inquisitor was an anomaly. That might have been your first experience with the Clave, but it wasn't mine. The Clave is us. The Nephilim. They abide by the law.
Except they didn't.
No, Jay said. They didn't.
He sounded very tired.
And the worst part about all this, he added, is remembering Valentine ranting about the Clave, how it's corrupt, how it needs to be cleansed. And by the angel, if I don't agree with him.
Clary was silent. First because she could think of nothing to say. And then, in startlement, as Jace reached out, almost as if he weren't thinking about what he was doing, and drew her toward him. To her surprise, she let him. Through the white material of his shirt she could see the outlines of his marks, black and curling, stroking across his skin like licks of flame. She wanted to lean her head against him, wanted to feel his arms around her, the way she'd wanted air when she was drowning in Lake Lynn. "He might be right that things need fixing," she said finally, "but he's not right about the way they should be fixed. You can see that, can't you?" He half closed his eyes. There were crescents of gray shadow under them, she saw, the remnants of sleepless nights.
"I'm not sure I can see anything." "You're right to be angry, Clary. I shouldn't have trusted the Clave. I wanted so badly to think that the Inquisitor was an abnormality, that she was acting without their authority, that there was still some part of being a shadow hunter I could trust."
"Jace," she whispered.
He opened his eyes and looked down at her. She and Jace were standing close enough, she realized, that they were touching all up and down their bodies. Even their knees were touching, and she could feel his heartbeat.
"Move away from him," she told herself. But her legs wouldn't obey.
"What is it?" he said, his voice very soft.
"I want to see Simon," she said. "Can you take me to see him?"
As abruptly as he had caught hold of her, he let her go. "No. You're not even supposed to be in Idris. You can't go waltzing into the guard."
"But he'll think everyone's abandoned him. He'll think..."
"I went to see him," Jay said. "I was going to let him out. I was going to tear the bars out of the window with my hands." His voice was matter of fact. "But he wouldn't let me."
"He wouldn't let you? He wanted to stay in jail?"
"He said the Inquisitor was sniffing around after my family, after me. Aldertree wants to blame what happened in New York on us. He can't grab one of us and torture it out of us. The Clave would frown on that. But he's trying to get Simon to tell him some story where we're all in cahoots with Valentine. Simon said if I break him out, then the Inquisitor will know I did it, and it'll be even worse for the Lightwoods."
"That's very noble of him and all, but what's his long-range plan, to stay in jail forever?"
Jay shrugged. "We hadn't exactly worked that out."
Clary blew out an exasperated breath. "Boys," she said. "All right, look, what you need is an alibi. We'll make sure you're somewhere everyone can see you, and the Lightwoods are too, and then we'll get Magnus to break Simon out of prison and get him back to New York."
"I hate to tell you this, Clary, but there's no way Magnus would do that. I don't care how cute he thinks Alec is. He's not going to go directly against the Clave as a favor to us."
"He might," Clary said, "for the Book of the White."
Jace blinked. "The what?" Quickly, Clary told him about Ragnar Fell's death, about Magnus showing up in Fell's place, and about the spell book. Jace listened with stunned attentiveness until she finished. "Demons?" he said. "Magnus said Fell was killed by demons?"
Clary cast her mind back.
"No, he said the place stank of something demonic in origin, and that Fell was killed by Valentine's servants. That's all he said." "Some dark magic leaves an aura that reeks like demons," Jace said. "If Magnus wasn't specific, it's probably because he's none too pleased that there's a warlock out there practicing dark magic, breaking the law. But it's hardly the first time Valentine's gotten one of Lilith's children to do his nasty bidding. Remember the warlock kid he killed in New York?"
"Valentine used his blood for the ritual, I remember," Clary shuddered. "Jace, does Valentine want the book for the same reason I do? To wake my mother up?"
"He might. Or if it's what Magnus says it is, Valentine might just want it for the power he could gain from it. Either way, we'd better get it before he does."
"Do you think there's any chance it's in the Wayland Manor?"
"I know it's there," he said to her surprise. "That cookbook? Recipes for housewives or whatever? I've seen it before. In the manor's library. It was the only cookbook in there."
Clary felt dizzy. She almost hadn't let herself believe it could be true. "Jace, if you take me to the manor and we get the book, I'll go home with Simon. Do this for me and I'll go to New York and I won't come back, I swear."
"Magnus was right. There are misdirection wards on the manor," he said slowly. "I'll take you there, but it's not close. Walking, it might take us 5 hours.
Clary reached out and drew his stele out of its loop on his belt. She held it up between them, where it glowed with a faint white light, not unlike the light of the glass towers. "Who said anything about walking?"
You get some strange visitors, Daylighter, Samuel said. First, Jonathan Morgenstern, and now the head vampire of New York City. I'm impressed.
Jonathan Morgenstern? It took Simon a moment to realize that this was, of course, Jace.
He was sitting on the floor in the center of the room, turning the empty flask in his hands over and over idly.
I guess I'm more important than I realized.
And Isabel Lightwood bringing you blood, Simon said. That's quite a delivery service.
Simon's head went up.
How do you know Isabel brought it? I didn't say anything.
I saw her through the window. She looks just like her mother, said Samuel. At least, the way her mother did years ago.
There was an awkward pause.
You know, the blood is only a stopgap, he added. Pretty soon the Inquisitor will start wondering if you've starved to death yet. If he finds you perfectly healthy, he'll figure out something's up and kill you anyway.
Simon looked up at the ceiling. The runes carved into the stone overlapped one another like shingled sand on a beach.
I guess I'll just have to believe Jace when he says they'll find a way to get me out, he said.
When Samuel said nothing in return, he added,
I'll ask him to get you out, too, I promise. I won't leave you down here.
Samuel made a choked noise like a laugh that couldn't quite make it out of his throat.
Oh, I don't think Jace Morgenstern is going to want to rescue me, he said. Besides, starving down here is the least of your problems, Daylighter. Soon enough, Valentine will attack the city, and then we'll likely all be killed.
Simon blinked.
How can you be so sure?
I was close to him at one point. I knew his plans, his goals. He intends to destroy Alicante's ward and strike at the clay from the heart of their power.
But I thought no demons could get past the wards. I thought they were impenetrable.
So it's said. It requires demon blood to take the wards down, you see. And it can only be done from inside Alicante. But because no demon can get through the wards, well, it's a perfect paradox, or should be. But Valentine claimed he'd found a way to get around that, a way to break through, and I believe him. He will find a way to take the wards down, and he will come into the city with his demon army, and he will kill us all.
The flat certainty in Samuel's voice sent a chill up Simon's spine.
You sound awfully resigned. Shouldn't you do something? Warn the Clave?
I did warn them, when they interrogated me. I told them over and over again that Valentine meant to destroy the wards, but they dismissed me. The Clave thinks the wards will stand forever because they've stood for 1,000 years. But so did Rome till the barbarians came. Everything falls someday.
He chuckled, a bitter, angry sound.
Consider it a race to see who kills you first, Daylighter. Valentine, the other downworlders, or the Clave.
Somewhere between here and there, Clary's hand was torn out of Jace's. When the hurricane spit her out and she hit the floor, she hit it alone hard and rolled gasping to a stop. She sat up slowly and looked around. She was lying in the center of a Persian rug thrown over the floor of a large stone-walled room. There were items of furniture here and there. The white sheets thrown over them turned them into humped, unwieldy ghosts. Velvet curtains sagged across huge glass windows. The velvet was gray-white with dust, and motes of dust danced in the moonlight.
Clary?
Jace emerged from behind a massive, white-sheeted shape. It might have been a grand piano.
Are you all right?
Fine. She stood up, wincing a little. Her elbow ached. Aside from the fact that Amatis will probably kill me when we get back, considering that I smashed all her plates and opened a portal in her kitchen. He reached his hand down to her.
For whatever it's worth, he said, helping her to her feet. I was very impressed.
Thanks. Clary glanced around. So this is where you grew up? It's like something out of a fairy tale.
I was thinking a horror movie, Jace said.
God, it's been years since I've seen this place. It didn't used to be so... so cold? Clary shivered a little. She buttoned her coat, but the cold in the manor was more than physical cold. The place felt cold, as if there had never been warmth or light or laughter inside it.
No, said Jace. It was always cold. I was going to say dusty. He took a witchlight stone out of his pocket, and it flared to life between his fingers. Its white glow lit his face from beneath, picking out the shadows under his cheekbones, the hollows at his temples.
"This is the study, and we need the library. Come on."
He led her from the room and down a long corridor lined with dozens of mirrors that gave back their own reflections. Clary hadn't realized quite how disheveled she looked. Her coat streaked with dust, her hair snarled from the wind. She tried to smooth it down discreetly and caught Jace's grin in the next mirror. For some reason, due doubtless to a mysterious shadow hunter magic she didn't have a hope of understanding, his hair looked perfect. The corridor was lined with doors, some open. Through them, Clary could glimpse other rooms, as dusty and unused-looking as the study had been. Michael Wayland had had no relatives, Valentine had said, so she supposed no one had inherited this place after his death. She had assumed Valentine had carried on living here, but that seemed clearly not to be the case. Everything breathed sorrow and disuse. At Renwick's, Valentine had called this place home, had showed it to Jace in the portal mirror, a gilt-edged memory of green fields and mellow stone. But that, Clary thought, had been a lie, too. It was clear Valentine hadn't really lived here in years. Perhaps he had just left it here to rot, or he had come here only occasionally to walk the dim corridors like a ghost. They reached a door at the end of the hallway, and Jace shouldered it open, standing back to let Clary pass into the room before him. She had been picturing the library at the Institute, and this room was not entirely unlike it. The same walls filled with row upon row of books, the same ladders on rolling casters so the high shelves could be reached. The ceiling was flat and beamed, though not conical, and there was no desk. Green velvet curtains, their folds iced with white dust, hung over windows that alternated panes of green and blue glass. In the moonlight, they sparkled like colored frost. Beyond the glass, all was black.
"This is the library?" she said to Jace in a whisper, though she wasn't sure why she was whispering. There was something so profoundly still about the big, empty house.
He was looking past her, his eyes dark with memory. "I used to sit in that window seat and read whatever my father had assigned me that day. Different languages on different days. French on Saturday, English on Sunday. But I can't remember now what day Latin was, if it was Monday or Tuesday." Clary had a sudden flashing image of Jace as a little boy, book balanced on his knees as he sat in the window embrasure, looking out over what? Were there gardens? A view? A high wall of thorns like the wall around Sleeping Beauty's castle? She saw him as he read, the light that came in through the window casting squares of blue and green over his fair hair and the small face more serious than any 10-year-old should be.
"I can't remember," he said again, staring into the dark.
She touched his shoulder.
"It doesn't matter, Jace."
"I suppose not."
He shook himself as if waking out of a dream and moved across the room, the witchlight lighting his way. He knelt down to inspect a row of books and straightened up with one of them in his hand.
"Simple Recipes for Housewives," he said. "Here it is."
She hurried across the room and took it from him. It was a plain-looking book with a blue binding and dusty, like everything in the house. When she opened it, dust swarmed up from its pages like a gathering of moths. A large square hole had been cut out of the center of the book. Fitted into the hole like a jewel in a bezel was a smaller volume, about the size of a small chapbook bound in white leather with the title printed in gilded Latin letters. Clary recognized the words for white and book. But when she lifted it out and opened it, to her surprise, the pages were covered with thin, spidery handwriting in a language she couldn't understand.
"Greek," Jay said, looking over her shoulder. "Of the ancient variety."
"Can you read it?"
"Not easily," he admitted. "It's been years. But Magnus will be able to, I imagine."
He closed the book and slipped it into the pocket of her green coat before turning back to the bookshelves, skimming his fingers along the rows of books, his fingertips tracing their spines.
"Are there any of these you want to take with you?" she asked gently. "If you'd like."
Jace laughed and dropped his hand.
"I was only allowed to read what I was assigned," he said. "Some of the shelves had books on them I wasn't even allowed to touch." He indicated a row of books higher up, bound in matching brown leather. I read one of them once when I was about 6, just to see what the fuss was about. It turned out to be a journal my father was keeping, about me. Notes about my son, Jonathan Christopher. He whipped me with a belt when he found out I'd read it. Actually, it was the first time I even knew I had a middle name. A sudden ache of hatred for her father went through Clary. Well, Valentine's not here now. Clary, Jace began, a warning note in his voice, but she'd already reached up and yanked one of the books out from the forbidden shelf, knocking it to the ground. It made a satisfying thump. Clary!
Oh, come on!
She did it again, knocking another book down, and then another. Dust puffed up from their pages as they hit the floor.
You try.
Jace looked at her for a moment, and then a half-smile teased the corner of his mouth. Reaching up, he swept his arm along the shelf, knocking the rest of the books to the ground with a loud crash. He laughed, and then broke off, lifting his head like a cat pricking up its ears at a distant sound. Do you hear that?
Hear what? Clary was about to ask, and stopped herself. There was a sound, getting louder now, a high-pitched whirring and grinding, like the sound of machinery coming to life. The sound seemed to be coming from inside the wall. She took an involuntary step back just as the stones in front of them slid back with a groaning, rusty scream. An opening gaped behind the stones, a sort of doorway, roughly hacked out of the wall. Beyond the doorway was a set of stairs leading down into darkness. Chapter 9. This Guilty Blood.
I didn't remember there even being a cellar here, Jay said, staring past Clary at the gaping hole in the wall. He raised the witchlight, and its glow bounced off the downward-leading tunnel. The walls were black and slick, made of a smooth, dark stone Clary didn't recognize. The steps gleamed as if they were damp. A strange smell drifted up through the opening, dank, musty, with a weird metallic tinge that set her nerves on edge.
What do you think could be down there?
I don't know. Jace moved toward the stairs. He put a foot on the top step, testing it, and then shrugged as if he'd made up his mind. He began to make his way down the steps, moving carefully. Partway down, he turned and looked up at Clary. Are you coming? You can wait up here for me if you want to. She glanced around the empty library, then shivered and hurried after him. The stairs spiraled down in tighter and tighter circles, as if they were making their way through the inside of a huge conch shell. The smell grew stronger as they reached the bottom, and the steps widened out into a large square room whose stone walls were streaked with the marks of damp and other, darker stains. The floor was scrawled with markings, a jumble of pentagrams and runes with white stones scattered here and there. Jace took a step forward and something crunched under his feet. He and Clary looked down at the same time.
Bones, Clary whispered. Not white stones after all, but bones of all shapes and sizes scattered across the floor. What was he doing here?
The witchlight burned in Jace's hand, casting its eerie glow over the room. Experiments, Jace said in a dry, tense tone. The Seelie Queen said.
What kind of bones are these? Clary's voice rose. Are they animal bones?
No. Jace kicked a pile of bones with his feet, scattering them. Not all of them. Clary's chest felt tight.
I think we should go back.
Instead, Jace raised the witchlight in his hand. It blazed out brightly, and then more brightly, lighting the air with a harsh white brilliance. The far corners of the room sprang into focus. Three of them were empty. The fourth was blocked with a hanging cloth. There was something behind the cloth, a humped shape.
Jace, Clary whispered, what is that?
He didn't reply. There was a seraph blade in his free hand suddenly. Clary didn't know when he'd drawn it, but it shone in the witchlight like a blade of ice.
Jace, don't, said Clary,
but it was too late. He strode forward and twitched the cloth aside with the tip of the blade, then seized it and jerked it down. It fell in a blossoming cloud of dust. Jace staggered back, the witchlight falling from his grasp. As the blazing light fell, Clary caught a single glimpse of his face. It was a white mask of horror.
Clary snatched the witch light up before it could go dark and raised it high, desperate to see what could have shocked Jace. Unshockable Jace, so badly. At first, all she saw was the shape of a man. A man wrapped in a dirty white rag crouched on the floor. Manacles circled his wrists and ankles, attached to thick metal staples driven into the stone floor. How can he be alive? Clary thought in horror, and bile rose up in her throat. The runestone shook in her hand, and light danced in patches over the prisoner. She saw emaciated arms and legs, scarred all over with the marks of countless tortures. The skull of a face turned toward her, black empty sockets where the eyes should have been, and then there was a dry rustle, and she saw that what she had thought was a white rag were wings. White wings, rising up behind his back in two pure white crescents, the only pure things in this filthy room. She gave a dry gasp. Jace, do you see?
I see.
Jace, standing beside her, spoke in a voice that cracked like broken glass. You said there weren't any angels, that no one had ever seen one. Jace was whispering something under his breath, a string of what sounded like panicked curses. He stumbled forward toward the huddled creature on the floor and recoiled as if he had bounced off an invisible wall. Looking down, Clary saw that the angel crouched inside a pentagram made of connected runes graven deeply into the floor. They glowed with a faint, phosphorescent light. "The runes," she whispered. "We can't get past."
"But there must be something," Jace said, his voice nearly breaking. "Something we can do."
The angel raised its head. Clary saw with a distracted, terrible pity that it had curly golden hair like Jace's that shone dully in the light. Tendrils clung close to the hollows of its skull. Its eyes were pits. Its face slashed with scars like a beautiful painting destroyed by vandals. As she stared, its mouth opened and a sound poured from its throat. Not words, but a piercing golden music. A single singing note, held and held and held so high and sweet that the sound was like pain. A flood of images rose up before Clary's eyes. She was still clutching the runestone, but its light was gone. She was gone, no longer there but somewhere else, where the pictures of the past flowed before her in a waking dream, fragments, colors, sounds. She was in a wine cellar, bare and clean, a single huge rune scrawled on the stone floor. A man stood beside it. He held an open book in one hand and a blazing white torch in the other. When he raised his head, Clary saw that it was Valentine. Much younger, his face unlined and handsome, his dark eyes clear and bright. As he chanted, the rune blazed up into fire, and when the flames receded, a crumpled figure lay among the ashes. An angel, wings spread and bloody, like a bird shot out of the sky. The scene changed. Valentine stood by a window. At his side, a young woman with shining red hair. A familiar silver ring gleamed on his hand as he reached to put his arms around her. With a jolt of pain, Clary recognized her mother. But she was young, her features soft and vulnerable. She was wearing a white nightgown and was obviously pregnant.
"The Accords," Valentine was saying angrily, "were not just the worst idea the Clave has ever had, but the worst thing that could happen to Nephilim. That we should be bound to Downworlders, tied to those creatures."
"Valentine," Jocelyn said with a smile, "enough about politics, please." She reached up and twined her arms around Valentine's neck, her expression full of love. And his was as well. But there was something else in it. Something that sent a shiver down Clary's spine. Valentine knelt in the center of a circle of trees. There was a bright moon overhead illuminating the black pentagram that had been scrawled into the scraped earth of the clearing. The branches of trees made a thick net overhead. Where they extended above the edge of the pentagram, their leaves curled and turned black. In the center of the five-pointed star sat a woman with long, shining hair. Her shape was slim and lovely, her face hidden in shadow, her arms bare and white. Her left hand was extended in front of her, and as she opened her fingers, Clary could see that there was a long slash across her palm, dripping a slow stream of blood into a silver cup that rested on the pentagram's edge. The blood looked black in the moonlight, or perhaps it was black.
"The child born with this blood in him," she said, and her voice was soft and lovely, "will exceed in power the greater demons of the abysses between the worlds. He will be more mighty than the Asmodee, stronger than the Shadow of the Storms. If he is properly trained, there is nothing he will not be able to do. Though I warn you," she added, "it will burn out his humanity as poison burns a life from the blood."
"My thanks to you, Lady of Edom," said Valentine,
and as he reached to take the cup of blood, the woman lifted her face, and Clary saw that though she was otherwise beautiful, her eyes were hollow black holes from which curled waving black tentacles like feelers probing the air. Clary stifled a scream. The night, the forest, vanished. Jocelyn stood facing someone Clary couldn't see. She was no longer pregnant, and her bright hair straggled around her stricken, despairing face.
"I can't stay with him, Ragnar," she said. "Not for another day. I read his book. Do you know what he did to Jonathan? I didn't think even Valentine could do that." Her shoulders shook. "He used demon blood. Jonathan's not a baby anymore. He isn't even human. He's a monster."
She vanished. Valentine was pacing restlessly around the circle of runes, a seraph blade shining in his hand.
"Why won't you speak?" he muttered. "Why won't you give me what I want?"
He drove down with the knife, and the angel writhed as golden liquid poured from its wound like spilled sunlight.
"If you won't give me answers," Valentine hissed, "you can give me your blood. It will do me and mine more good than it will you."
Now they were in the Wayland Library. Sunlight shone through the diamond-paned windows, flooding the room with blue and green. Voices came from another room, the sounds of laughter and chatting, a party going on. Jocelyn knelt by the bookshelf, glancing from side to side. She drew a thick book from her pocket and slipped it onto the shelf. And she was gone. The scene showed a cellar. The same cellar that Clary knew she was standing in right now. The same scrawled pentagram scarred the floor, and within the center of the star lay the angel. Valentine stood by, once again with the burning seraph blade in his hand. He looked years older now, no longer a young man.
"Ithuriel," he said, "we are old friends now, aren't we? I could have left you buried alive under those ruins, but no, I brought you here with me. All these years I've kept you close, hoping one day you would tell me what I wanted, needed to know."
He came closer, holding the blade out, its blaze lighting the runic barrier to a shimmer.
"When I summoned you, I dreamed that you would tell me why. Why Raziel created us, his race of shadow hunters, yet did not give us the powers downworlders have. The speed of the wolves, the immortality of the fair folk, the magic of warlocks, even the endurance of vampires. He left us naked before the hosts of hell but for these painted lines on our skin. Why should their powers be greater than ours? Why can't we share in what they have? How is that just?"
Within its imprisoning star, the angel sat silent as a marble statue, unmoving, its wings folded. Its eyes expressed nothing beyond a terrible, silent sorrow. Valentine's mouth twisted.
"Very well. Keep your silence. I will have my chance."
Valentine lifted the blade.
"I have the mortal cup, Ithuriel, and soon I shall have the sword. But without the mirror, I cannot begin the summoning. The mirror is all I need. Tell me where it is. Tell me where it is, Ithuriel, and I will let you die."
The scene broke apart in fragments, and as her vision faded, Clary caught glimpses of images now familiar to her from her own nightmares. Angels with wings both white and black, sheets of mirrored water, gold and blood, and Jace, turning away from her, always turning away. Clary reached out for him, and for the first time the angel's voice spoke in her head in words that she could understand. "These are not the first dreams I have ever showed you." The image of Arun burst behind her eyes like fireworks. Not Arun she had ever seen before. It was as strong, simple, and straightforward as a tied knot. It was gone in a breath as well, and as it vanished, the angel singing ceased. Clary was back in her own body, reeling on her feet in the filthy and reeking room. The angel was silent, frozen, wings folded, a grieving effigy. Clary let out her breath in a sob.
"Ethereal."
She reached her hands out to the angel, knowing she couldn't pass the runes, her heart aching. For years the angel had been down here, sitting silent and alone in the blackness, chained and starving but unable to die. Jace was beside her. She could see from his stricken face that he'd seen everything she had. He looked down at the seraph blade in his hand and then back at the angel. Its blind face was turned toward them in silent supplication. Jace took a step forward and then another. His eyes were fixed on the angel, and it was as if, Clary thought, there were some silent communication passing between them, some speech she couldn't hear. Jace's eyes were bright as gold disks, full of reflected light.
"Ethereal," he whispered.
The blade in his hand blazed up like a torch. Its glow was blinding. The angel raised its face as if the light were visible to its blind eyes. It reached out its hands, the chains that bound its wrists rattling like harsh music. Jace turned to her.
"Clary," he said. "The runes."
The runes. For a moment she stared at him, puzzled, but his eyes urged her onward. She handed Jace the witchlight, took his stele from her pocket, and knelt down by the scrawled runes. They looked as if they'd been gouged into the stone with something sharp. She glanced up at Jace. His expression startled her, the blaze in his eyes. They were full of faith in her, of confidence in her abilities. With the tip of the stele she traced several lines into the floor, changing the runes of binding to runes of release, imprisonment to openness. They flared up as she traced them, as if she were dragging a match tip across sulfur. Done. She rose to her feet. The runes shimmered before her. Abruptly, Jace moved to stand beside her. The witchlight stone was gone, the only illumination coming from the seraph blade that he'd named for the angel, blazing in his hand. He stretched it out, and this time his hand passed through the barrier of the runes as if there were nothing there. The angel reached its hands up and took the blade from him. It shut its blind eyes, and Clary thought for a moment that it smiled. It turned the blade in its grasp until the sharp tip rested just below its breastbone. Clary gave a little gasp and moved forward, but Jace grabbed her arm, his grip like iron, and yanked her backward, just as the angel drove the blade home. The angel's head fell back, its hands dropping from the hilt, which protruded from just where its heart would be, if angels had hearts. Clary didn't know. Flames burst from the wound, spreading outward from the blade. The angel's body shimmered into white flame, the chains on its wrist burning scarlet, like iron left too long in a fire. Clary thought of medieval paintings of saints consumed in the blaze of holy ecstasy, and the angel's wings flew wide and white before they, too, caught and blazed up, a lattice of shimmering fire. Clary could no longer watch. She turned and buried her face in Jace's shoulder. His arms came around her, his grip tight and hard.
"It's all right," he said into her hair. "It's all right."
But the air was full of smoke and the ground felt like it was rocking under her feet. It was only when Jace stumbled that she realized it wasn't shock. The ground was moving. She let go of Jace and staggered. The stones underfoot were grinding together, and a thin rain of dirt was sifting down from the ceiling. The angel was a pillar of smoke. The runes around it glowed painfully bright. Clary stared at them, decoding their meaning, and then looked wildly at Jace. The manor. It was tied to Ethereal. If the angel dies, the manor... She didn't finish her sentence. He had already seized her hand and was running for the stairs, pulling her along after him. The stairs themselves were surging and buckling. Clary fell, banging her knee painfully on a step, but Jace's grip on her arm didn't loosen. She raced on, ignoring the pain in her leg, her lungs full of choking dust. They reached the top of the steps and exploded out into the library. Behind them, Clary could hear the soft roar as the rest of the stairs collapsed. It wasn't much better here. The room was shuddering, books tumbling from their shelves. A statue lay where it had tipped over in a pile of jagged shards. Jace let go of Clary's hand, seized up a chair, and before she could ask him what he meant to do, threw it at the stained glass window. It sailed through in a waterfall of broken glass. Jace turned and held his hand out to her. Behind him, through the jagged frame that remained, she could see a moonlight-saturated stretch of grass and a line of treetops in the distance. They seemed a long way down. "I can't jump that far," she thought, and was about to shake her head at Jace when she saw his eyes widen, his mouth shaping a warning. One of the heavy marble busts that lined the higher shelves had slid free and was falling toward her. She ducked out of its way, and it hit the floor inches from where she'd been standing, leaving a sizable dent in the floor. A second later, Jace's arms were around her, and he was lifting her off her feet. She was too surprised to struggle as he carried her over to the broken window and dumped her unceremoniously out of it. She hit a grassy rise just below the window and tumbled down its steep incline, gaining speed until she fetched up against a hillock with enough force to knock the breath out of her. She sat up, shaking grass out of her hair. A second later, Jace came to a stop next to her. Unlike her, he rolled immediately into a crouch, staring up the hill at the manor house. Clary turned to look where he was looking, but he'd already grabbed her, shoving her down into the depression between the two hills. Later, she'd find dark bruises on her upper arms where he'd held her. Now, she just gasped in surprise as he knocked her down and rolled on top of her, shielding her with his body as a huge roar went up. It sounded like the earth shattering apart, like a volcano erupting. A blast of white dust shot into the sky. Clary heard a sharp pattering noise all around her. For a bewildered moment, she thought it had started to rain. Then she realized it was rubble and dirt and broken glass, the detritus of the shattered manor being flung down around them like deadly hail. Jace pressed her harder into the ground, his body flat against hers, his heartbeat nearly as loud in her ears as the sound of the manor's subsiding ruins. The roar of the collapse faded slowly, like smoke dissipating into the air. It was replaced by the loud chirruping of startled birds. Clary could see them over Jace's shoulder, circling curiously against the dark sky. "Jace," she said softly, "I think I dropped your stele somewhere." He drew back slightly, propping himself on his elbows, and looked down at her. Even in the darkness, she could see herself reflected in his eyes. His face was streaked with soot and dirt, the collar of his shirt torn. "That's all right, as long as you're not hurt."
"I'm fine."
Without thinking, she reached up, her fingers brushing lightly through his hair. She felt him tense, his eyes darkening.
"There was grass in your hair," she said.
Her mouth was dry. Adrenaline sang through her veins. Everything that had just happened, the angel, the shattering manor, seemed less real than what she saw in Jace's eyes.
"You shouldn't touch me," he said.
Her hand froze where it was, her palm against his cheek.
"Why not?"
"You know why," he said, and shifted away from her, rolling onto his back. "You saw what I saw, didn't you? The past, the angel, our parents."
It was the first time, she thought, that he'd called them that. Our parents. She turned onto her side, wanting to reach out to him, but not sure if she should. He was staring blindly up at the sky.
"I saw."
"You know what I am."
The words breathed out in an anguished whisper.
"I'm part demon, Clary." "Part demon. You understood that much, didn't you?"
His eyes bored into her like drills.
"You saw what Valentine was trying to do. He used demon blood. Used it on me before I was even born. I'm part monster. Part everything I've tried so hard to burn out, to destroy."
Clary pushed away the memory of Valentine's voice saying,
"She left me because I turned her first child into a monster."
"But warlocks are part demon.
like Magnus. It doesn't make them evil.
Not part greater demon. You heard what the demon woman said.
It will burn out his humanity as poison burns the life from the blood. Clary's voice trembled. It's not true. It can't be. It doesn't make sense.
But it does.
There was a furious desperation in Jace's expression. She could see the gleam of the silver chain around his bare throat, lit to a white flare by the starlight.
It explains everything.
You mean it explains why you're such an amazing shadow hunter? Why you're loyal and fearless and honest and everything demons aren't?
It explains, he said evenly, why I feel the way I do about you.
What do you mean?
He was silent for a long moment, staring at her across the tiny space that separated them. She could feel him, even though he wasn't touching her, as if he still lay with his body against hers.
You're my sister, he said finally. My sister, my blood, my family. I should want to protect you.
He laughed, soundlessly and without any humor.
To protect you from the sort of boys who want to do with you exactly what I want to do.
Clary's breath caught.
You said you just wanted to be my brother from now on.
I lied, he said. Demons lie, Clary. You know, there are some kinds of wounds you can get when you're a shadow hunter. Internal injuries from demon poison. You don't even know what's wrong with you, but you're bleeding to death slowly inside. That's what it's like, just being your brother.
But Aline...
I had to try, and I did.
His voice was lifeless.
But God knows I don't want anyone but you. I don't even want anyone but you.
He reached out, trailed his fingers lightly through her hair, fingertips brushing her cheek.
Now at least I know why.
Clary's voice had sunk to a whisper. I don't want anyone but you either. She was rewarded by the catch in his breathing. Slowly, he drew himself up onto his elbows. Now he was looking down at her, and his expression had changed. There was a look on his face she'd never seen before, a sleepy, almost deadly light in his eyes. He let his fingers trail down her cheeks to her lips, outlining the shape of her mouth with the tip of a finger.
You should probably, he said, tell me not to do this.
She said nothing. She didn't want to tell him to stop. She was tired of saying no to Jace, of never letting herself feel what her whole heart wanted to feel, whatever the cost. He bent down, his lips against her cheek, brushing it lightly. And still that light touch sent shivers through her nerves, shivers that made her whole body tremble.
If you want me to stop, tell me now, he whispered.
When she still said nothing, he brushed his mouth against the hollow of her temple.
Or now?
He traced the line of her cheekbone.
Or now?
His lips were against hers.
Or...
But she had reached up and pulled him down to her, and the rest of his words were lost against her mouth. He kissed her gently, carefully, but it wasn't gentleness she wanted, not now, not after all this time, and she knotted her fists in his shirt, pulling him harder against her. He groaned softly, low in his throat, and then his arms circled her, gathering her against him, and they rolled over on the grass, tangled together, still kissing. There were rocks digging into Clary's back, and her shoulder ached where she'd fallen from the window, but she didn't care. All that existed was Jace. All she felt, hoped, breathed, wanted, and saw was Jace. Nothing else mattered. Despite her coat, she could feel the heat of him burning through his clothes and hers. She tugged his jacket off, and then somehow his shirt was off too. Her fingers explored his body as his mouth explored hers. Soft skin over lean muscle, scars like thin wires. She touched the star-shaped scar on his shoulder. It was smooth and flat, as if it were part of his skin, not raised like his other scars. She supposed they were imperfections, these marks, but they didn't feel that way to her. They were a history, cut into his body, the map of a life of endless war. He fumbled with the buttons of her coat, his hands shaking. She didn't think she'd ever seen Jace's hands unsteady before. I'll do it, she said, and reached for the last button herself. As she raised herself up, something cold and metallic struck her collarbone, and she gasped in surprise.
What is it? Jace froze. Did I hurt you?
No, it was this.
She touched the silver chain around his neck. On its end hung a small silver circle of metal. It had bumped against her when she'd leaned forward. She stared at it now. That ring, the weather-beaten metal with its pattern of stars, she knew that ring. The Morgenstern ring. It was the same ring that had gleamed on Valentine's hand in the dream the angel had showed them. It had been his, and he had given it to Jace, as it had always been passed along father to son.
"I'm sorry," Jace said.
He traced the line of her cheek with his fingertip, a dreamlike intensity in his gaze.
"I forgot I was wearing the damn thing."
Sudden cold flooded Clary's veins. "Jace," she said in a low voice. "Jace, don't."
"Don't what? Don't wear the ring?"
"No, don't touch me. Stop for a second." His face went still. Questions had chased away the dreamlike confusion in his eyes, but he said nothing, just withdrew his hand. "Jace," she said again. "Why? Why now?" His lips parted in surprise. She could see a dark line where he had bitten his bottom lip, or maybe she had bitten it.
"Why what now?"
"You said there was nothing between us. That if we let ourselves feel what we might want to feel, we'd be hurting everyone we care about."
"I told you. I was lying."
His eyes softened. "You think I don't want to?" "No," she said. "No, I'm not stupid. I know that you do. But when you said that now, you finally understand why you feel this way about me. What do you mean?" Not that she didn't know, she thought, but she had to ask, had to hear him say it. Jace caught her wrists and drew her hands up to his face, lacing his fingers through hers.
"You remember what I said to you at the Panhollow's house?" he asked. "That you never think about what you do before you do it, and that's why you wreck everything you touch?"
"No, I'd forgotten that. Thanks for the reminder."
He barely seemed to notice the sarcasm in her voice. "I wasn't talking about you, Clary. I was talking about me. That's what I'm like."
He turned his face slightly and her finger slid along his cheek.
"At least now I know why. I know what's wrong with me, and maybe that's why I need you so much. Because if Valentine made me a monster, then I suppose he made you a sort of angel. And Lucifer loved God, didn't he? So says Milton, anyway."
Clary sucked in her breath. "I am not an angel. And you don't even know that that's what Valentine used Ethereal's blood for. Maybe Valentine just wanted it for himself."
"He said the blood was for me and mine," Jay said quietly. "It explains why you can do what you can do, Clary. The Sealy Queen said we were both experiments, not just me."
"I'm not an angel, Jace," she repeated. "I don't return library books. I steal illegal music off the internet. I lie to my mom. I am completely ordinary."
"Not to me."
He looked down at her. His face hovered against a background of stars. There was nothing of his usual arrogance in his expression. She had never seen him look so unguarded, but even that unguardedness was mixed with a self-hatred that ran as deep as a wound.
"Clary, I..."
"Get off me," Clary said.
"What?"
The desire in his eyes cracked into a thousand pieces like the shards of the portal mirror at Renwick's, and for a moment his expression was blankly astonished. She could hardly bear to look at him and still say no. Looking at him now, even if she hadn't been in love with him, that part of her that was her mother's daughter, that loved every beautiful thing for its beauty alone, would still have wanted him. But then, it was precisely because she was her mother's daughter that it was impossible. "You heard me," she said. "And leave my hands alone." She snatched them back, knotting them into tight fists to stop their shaking. He didn't move. His lip curled back, and for a moment she saw that predatory light in his eyes, but now it was mixed with anger.
"I don't suppose you want to tell me why?"
"You think you only want me because you're evil, not human. You just want something else you can hate yourself for. I won't let you use me to prove to yourself how worthless you are."
"I never said that. I never said I was using you."
"Fine," she said. "Tell me now that you're not a monster. Tell me there's nothing wrong with you. And tell me you would want me even if you didn't have demon blood."
"Because I don't have demon blood, and I still want you."
Their gazes locked, his blindly furious. For a moment, neither breathed, and then he flung himself off her, swearing, and rolled to his feet. Snatching his shirt up from the grass, he drew it over his head, still glaring. He yanked the shirt down over his jeans and turned away to look for his jacket. Clary.